Welcome to Hutch on Hunting. This is Bruce Hutchin, your host for this podcast. I'm the CEO of Hutch on Hunting Research and Information. I'm a digital scouter. And at hutchonhunting.com, you will see all my offerings and how I cover the state of Colorado for all big game species. Please reach out to me at hutchonhunting@gmail.com, and I'll send you the link to set up a free discovery call where we'll talk about what you're looking for and how I can help you. hutchonhunting.com brings you the finest Colorado-specific research tools for your upcoming hunt. Welcome to another episode of Hutch on Hunting. This is your host, Bruce Hutchin. And we're heading out to Nebraska today, and I'm going to connect with Logan Jure-Arden. And he's been there for over, he's been at AeroSeeds for over 10 years. And I want to get Logan back on because, a few years ago when I was running another podcast, I had one of his compadres on, and we were talking about, you know, food plots in the whitetail industry. Well, folks, people are putting in food plots for elk and mule deer and antelope because they've understood that if they have a crop, then they can keep the critters hanging on their properties. Now, obviously, this is private land property that they're doing this on, but it is growing, and we're going to get into that in our discussion today with Logan. So, Logan, welcome to the show, and what do you want the listeners to know about?
Well, first off, thanks for having me. Appreciate the opportunity to get on here and blab about food plots.
My pleasure.
So, I've been part of the AeroSeed family for my 35 years of existence. My great grandfather actually started AeroSeed back in the 40s.
Wow.
So it's been a family affair.
So that was all in the ag business then.
Yep. So we started out, if a cow could eat it, we sold it.
Oh my goodness. So in that side of the business, what things did you learn that helped you continue growing your business into the explosion of food plots?
Yeah. So the biggest thing, when you think about nuts and bolts, a cow and a deer really aren't that different as far as what they're going to forage or what they're going to eat, you know. And if the name of the game on the cattle side of things is you want a high protein, high efficiency, something the cow is going to eat and, you know, get healthier, gain a lot of weight, just be bigger, stronger, better. Well, you do that for deer, and guess what? You're looking at a wall full of booners in just a few years.
Yeah. Or so, depends on other aspects, especially in the whitetail world.
Right. You know, genetics obviously play a big part of that. But if you can start, you know, if you can start supplementing your deer herd with a good diet, good forages, it's just going to help, you know, it's going to help out overall.
And I remember how many years we were hunting in the same farm, which I'm still hunting, and we'd asked the farmer to switch up his crop rotations so he could get better food for the deer.
Yep.
But yep. Money played into that because, you know, he's looking at, you know, dollars per bushel, you know, mm-hmm. of the yield. And plus, as I understand it, and you're going to correct me right now, why is it so important that farmers go from beans to corn to just hay and then maybe alfalfa? Why do they rotate the crops?
So most generally rotate crops, and I don't consider just a soybean corn, I don't consider that an actual rotation, mainly because you're going to still run into the same pest problems, you know, the same disease problems year over year if you just have two crops in rotation. You throw alfalfa, like you said, or a small grain such as oats or wheat or barley or something along those lines, it's going to break up that pest cycle, but that's also going to draw the deer in. The deer are going to go, you know, I've never seen this type of food here before. I better check it out.
And so when you're selling seed, what's the most important thing the person buying the seed wants the seed to do?
So the first and foremost, you know, just like anything else, it's that instant, you plant it and a week later it comes up. That's what you want to see. But most of our customers, they're planting food plots now for use during season, which would be in the future. So they want it to bring deer in the future. That's probably first and foremost. That's their end goal, is to be sitting in their tree stand, sitting in their ground blind, watching their food plot just full of deer.
Because with the germination, so you got to have a slower germination on your food plot then.
Nope, you want a quicker germination.
Quicker
So it
germination, okay.
establishes quicker, so it gets going quicker in the season. So it's there's more feed there, there's more forage there when you're going to be hunting over it.
Okay, so here we are in February 20th. So when am I gonna prepare my soil and get it ready for seed?
So if you're doing a if you're doing a perennial food plot, so that'd be like our full potential or trophy banquet, which would be like alfalfa clover, chicory, that type of stuff. You'd start prepping your ground sometime in mid-March and shoot for a 1st of April planting.
All right. Now, what about my brassicas and that? When do I plant that then?
So your brassicas and stuff like that, generally you don't plant till later in the summer or early fall. The reason for that, if you plant brassicas early in the spring, there's such a short window for them to grow that they're going to try to go reproductive. So they're not going to put on a lot of feed value. They're going to try to go straight to a flower to put a seed, to put a seed on when it starts getting hot. So if you wait and plant your brassicas this fall, when that temperature is starting to cool down, they're going to stay vegetative longer. So they're going to have more attracting power planted, sometime late July, early August, to carry you through that fall season.
So when you look at the turnips and brassicas, you want them, as far as I knew, you want them to carry through the winter to give, the sugar content, the energy
Exactly.
to the critters.
Yep. So I don't know if you garden a whole lot.
Nope.
If you've ever planted radishes, so just for instance, if you planted radishes in your garden in the spring, and maybe you didn't get them all picked before summer, before it started getting really hot out, you're gonna start seeing these plants that you go, "What in the world is that growing in my row of radishes?" Well, it's a radish that bolted, which means it put on a stalk and then puts on a flower and a seed head, because it's trying to go into reproductive mode. When it gets super hot out, and you don't want that for food plots, because then nothing will eat it.
Right.
So
But
that's why,
will it germinate new plants then? Will it become a perennial?
not generally, unless you have a lot longer season, I guess it might, but it's going to get froze off before it can reseed itself, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I've done a lot of food plotting personally. It's fun to do. But we've tried planting brassicas in the spring, and they look good for like 2 weeks, and then they start trying to flower on you, and then nothing comes in to eat them.
So, if somebody went on Google, would they be able to find a calendar that says, here's when you plant your oats and chicory and.
So we do on our AeroSeed Facebook page, and after we're done with this podcast, I can probably go in and pin it to the top of our AeroSeed Company food plot, or our AeroSeed Company Facebook page.
Yeah.
But I made a quick date or a quick reference chart, basically, that has when you would plant stuff, your planting, your population, so how many pounds per acre you're planting.
It's not on your website right now.
I don't know if I have that one on there. I think I've got something similar, but this one's more detailed, I guess.
Well, let's share the screen and go to your website.
I
Welcome to Arrow Seed. We know seed. Can you see this? Can you
guess
see
I
the?
tried. There, I just had to turn my phone.
Okay, so where do I want to go?
So it's either gonna, if you scroll down on the food plot, I think it's there. If you scroll down a little bit more, there should be a blurb about some of the different food plots and stuff, but I think there's a quick dates and rates. No, maybe not. Well,
No.
I will have to get that on there.
Yeah, okay.
I know on most of those products, if you get in depth into them and you start browsing that website, they've got, ideal planting dates on it, I guess.
Yeah, and that's what people are going to want to see. They're going to want to see.
So if there's something on not on the website that should be on there, you're talking to the guy that does a lot of that back end stuff.
Okay,
So
well, you're the man.
I do a lot of that stuff around here.
Yeah, and that's just at arrowseed.com, folks. You can go there. And how competitive has the industry gotten
Oh, it's
over the last few years?
ridiculous. I would say the food plot market has got very saturated with, a lot of different quote unquote brands doing the food plot thing, but they're all getting their seed from the same place, if that makes sense.
Is that in China or
No, a lot of
Yeah.
that stuff, there's when you think about the grand scheme of things, there's only a handful of actual food plot companies that blend their stuff in-house. So Arrow Seed would be one of them.
Okay, explain that. Explain blending the seed. Let's go to school here.
So for instance, like I'm just gonna throw Whitetail Institute out there because they're a fairly well-known brand, I guess.
Yeah, they got great marketing.
Exactly. So there's not a Whitetail Institute physical seed warehouse location. They go to company B to private label their stuff as Whitetail Institute. So you got, 40 different food plot brands out there. There might be two or three of them that are actually doing all of the work, as far as blending the seed, packaging it, all of that stuff in-house. A lot of them are subcontracting, essentially.
And I have a friend, John O'Brien, Grandpa Ray, and he's been in the ag business 25 years, and he taught me how to read the tag. Because the most important you can do, folks, and this is important, when you go to the big box stores and, oh, look at this, I can get this for $30, and it's enough to cover 20 acres, 10 acres. But you have to look at one, the inert materials. And what are the other things on that tag you want to look at, Logan?
So what we do on our tags, talking about the inert matter. So like on our alfalfa and clover mixes, a lot of that alfalfa and clover is inoculated and coated. So that technically counts as inert matter, but it helps the seed germinate, keeps it healthy, keeps the seedling vigor healthy. So it's just an all around better food plot and just a better stand in general. But the things we like to put on our tags is the date that it was tested to make sure that it grows.
It germinates. Make sure it's going to germinate.
Make sure it's going to germinate. If I sent you a bag of seed and you looked at the tag and it said date tested 2017, are you going to feel very comfortable about planting that?
Nope.
Exactly. So we get all of our stuff tested every year if we have carryover. So say like our Trophy Banquet food plot. Say we mixed up 100 acres worth a year ago and we're still sitting on 5 or 6 acres worth. We send that in to get tested to make sure that it grows after that year test is up. So we're not sending you old seed or, stuff that has been sitting in the back for years on end. We don't send it out until we know that it grows.
You mentioned coating. Why do you coat seed?
So A, it plants easier. B, it protects the seed. So there's insects that'll eat the seed. So some of this stuff has insecticide built into it. And then it's got inoculant as well. So the inoculant on legumes such as alfalfa or clover, that helps it nodulate, which equates to it produces more nitrogen from the air, which means it's going to be a healthier, more robust plant when it's established.
What else is on the tag?
The species that are in it and the percentages by weight of those species.
Okay. So it'll say if I get a blend, it'll say how much percentage of that blend is in that pound bag of seed.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Exactly. And then it also tells you if there's weed seeds and what the percentage is there, and if there's any noxious weeds. And there can't be any noxious
I was
weeds.
going to say, why the heck would I want a noxious seed?
Exactly. So, but that just goes into what we at AeroSeed do, just in general. We're a true seed company. That's what we do. We sell seed. We stand behind our product because that's what this company was built on. We're not going to sell you junk and be like, oh, why is nobody coming back? Why don't we have any repeat customers? Well, if you don't sell a quality product, you're not going to have repeat customers.
Now, price-wise, where does your prices fall for, 40 acres of product?
I would say we're really competitive with what's out there. Some stuff we're probably a little bit cheaper, some stuff we're maybe a little bit higher, but that just depends on where we can source seed from. If it's stuff that we can grow local, then our price is probably going to come down a little bit because we don't have any of the trucking or added expense into getting that seed here.
So does anybody completely own their own seed business from the time that you plant the seed in the ground to harvest it, to you package it, to you sell it? Does
There's,
anybody do that?
I'm sure there's a few companies that do. We're, I guess, almost there. We do source a lot of stuff out of the Pacific Northwest, just where it's grown, where they have a better growing season for certain stuff from a
Right.
seed standpoint. But like oats, for instance, the oats that are in our Crunch and Munch food plot, which is just an annual food plot with a bunch of different stuff in it, a great beginner food plot. The oats that are in there, you're looking at the guy that grew them.
Wow.
So we farm about 1,000 acres on the side, me and a buddy, on the side for seed production that we have contracted back here at AeroSeed.
Okay, so I'm talking to a guy that goes out there and plants the seed. So you're drilled it in, and then you're harvesting it at such time as you can get the flowers out, and then it creates the seed. So you're harvesting that seed. Then you're bringing it back to the shop and selling that. And so you are in that
In
vein.
that as yeah, in that aspect, we're,
You're
what do you call it,
controlling.
vertically integrated, I guess. It goes from seed to seed and comes back here and goes in to
Product.
seed mixes into product.
Right. And then
And
out the door.
we're cleaning oats as we speak that I grew last year.
Are you?
So yeah, we a lot of our stuff is, it's not old seed going into these mixes. It's fresh, new crop just
And
coming
the
in.
testing label on the label, it'll say when it's tested. So in your estimation, is 2 years too long for a
It
test to be
depends on
valid?
the seed. There's a lot of variability there. By law, and I don't quote me on this, but I think in Nebraska anyway, we're required to get seed tests every year. It's like say we sent something in for a test, or we got a test back on something the 1st of January of 2024. If we're still sitting on seed next year on December 31st, 2024, we'll have to send it in for a regerm for a new germination test because that year time frame has been up.
Now, do you measure what your sales are in tonnage or packages, or how do you measure that? I'm
As
not
far
asking
as
for your revenue. I'm not asking for your
right.
revenue.
So
Just.
what I look at, so I'm the one that's also in charge of writing up our food plot mixes
Okay.
and kind of forecasting what we might need on any given year. We like to blend a lot of our food plots over the winter time when it's a little bit slower with everything else. That's kind of just how the cookie crumbles, I guess. But I'll look at say the past 3 years in sales versus what we've got currently on hand and break it down that way. One that absolutely flies out the door is our green screen. It's by far our number one food plot product, and it's a It's a proprietary blend of some different sorghums and sorghum type grasses. No Egyptian wheat.
I was gonna say
Because
that was the word that was gonna come out of my mouth.
I want to be very clear on that. We don't use Egyptian wheat. But that one's by far our number one seller, and it goes, I think we've probably shipped it to all 50 states by now. I mean,
How high does
it's
that get?
insane.
How high does that screen get?
Me personally, 2 years ago, we had some that was pushing 16 foot.
Oh my goodness.
So it was ridiculously tall. But, that's one that, say we sold 100 bags in June of whatever year, but we've only got 40 on hand. I'm going to write up another blend and have extra.
Now, who figures out, obviously you're blending it, so how do you figure out the right ratios for the blend to get the performance out of the seed?
A lot of trial and error. So there's, some stuff you don't want to have in at a super high rate. Just if it's something with 100,000 seeds per pound, you're not going to want to put in 1 pound per acre in that mix because that'd be way too much. So
Way too much seed, right?
it's a, like I said, a lot of trial and error. But we've got some really good resources that we work with on the, few universities and stuff like that that have really good information on planting rates and what percentages in a mix would be adequate.
Now, are you a big non-tillage guy, or you don't care if you drill it in, or?
It depends on the situation. There's not really a right or wrong answer. Myself and all of our farming operations that we do, we're no-till on probably 90% of it. But there's some stuff that we grow that, it needs a little bit firmer seed bed or a little bit just needs some dirt work done. So then we till it, just disc it and pack it back down. So we do a lot of small grains. So that'd be oats as the big one that we do personally. And then we've got some native grasses in production too, as well as buffalo grass. So all three of those crops are completely different. So some of it we had to do some dirt work on and, couldn't no-till it. Some of it we could. Some of it we could have no-tilled it if the previous tenants of that field had done some work, but there was ruts that we had to get smoothed out, so it's a lot of variables there. But from a food plot perspective, if you can do no-till, you're going to be light years ahead.
Way better off, as I understand it. Why is that?
So anytime you don't disturb the soil, you're not bringing up a bajillion different weed seeds that are going, hey, I haven't seen the light of day in 40 years. This is awesome. I'm going to start growing now. So you're keeping that mulch on there essentially. That also helps keep the soil moisture. If you have open soil, there goes all your moisture. It's going to evaporate real quick. And in that same sentence, if you have bare soil, Mother Nature is going to plant something on there for you that you probably don't want. So if you can no-till it, and I've done this, actually had a food plot in the bottom of a canyon in central Nebraska, about a 2 acre food plot, and I went in there with a little four-wheeler sprayer and sprayed Roundup on it, but I didn't take a disc, I didn't do anything, and then all I did was broadcast on top of that and then ran it over with a harrow.
That
So
was
there,
it.
I mean, it looked horrible for a couple weeks, and then you go out there and you start seeing little sprouts. And then I had probably one of the best food plots I've had in the past 10 years out there. And I'm a firm believer it's because I didn't disturb the soil.
So that was a kill plot, right?
It was plenty of mule deer and whitetail down there.
So how'd you do?
We shot one mule deer off of it and had a bunch of chances that didn't pan out.
Yeah. Now, are you
So
setting up ground blinds or?
So on the side of the canyon that it was in, and it's hard to explain without having a picture.
Sure.
But the side of that canyon was fairly steep, and there were some cedar trees around the rim of it. So basically, we just tucked up underneath one of the cedar trees that had the best shot that we could play the wind, right? And it worked out. We had, I don't know how many hundreds of deer we saw funnel through that food plot, but it was awesome.
And how far were the cedars from the food plot?
About 30 yards.
Oh, okay. So they were right on top of it.
Yeah, but the deer, the trail that the deer would use, I mean, they're unless they were walking right at you up the hill, they weren't going to see you.
That's kind of cool.
So, yeah, food plots, they're just another tool to have, and if the terrain is right and you can make it work, they can be a really excellent tool to put the deer where you have the best chance.
Yeah, now here's a real live situation. You're going to coach me up. So I've got my little honey hole on the farm. Nobody else hunts it, and it's probably an acre. Probably it's probably an acre. And it's, in the forest, but it's thin. It was timbered a while back, like 20 years ago back. And so I want to pull a kill plot in there. And all I was going to do is go in there and either blow the leaves off or rake them off and then just broadcast the seed. That's all I was going to do. I was going to put no, herbicides on it and just rake the leaves back and then broadcast it and see what happens. Would
Yep,
that
so
work or not?
it's very variable. So I'd ask you a few questions to
Go
make
ahead.
sure I'm sending you the right product. So what's your canopy like? Is it shaded
Yeah, it's
most of the day?
mature. Yeah, it's mature, but like I said, there's enough space in there that there's enough light all throughout the day,
Okay,
east to
because there,
west.
yep. The reason I ask that, we've got a mix called our shade mix food plot
Right.
that is for, like the, I guess I'd call it a 70% shaded throughout the day type of situation. We've sent, geez, a lot to the upper Midwest, Minnesota,
Yeah,
Wisconsin,
this is in
Michigan.
outside of Baraboo, Wisconsin.
Yep.
That's right
So
where it is.
in that instance, if it's like a clear cut or an ATV trail or
No, there's no, tr well, this
so.
sort of kind of was where they timbered it. Those logging roads are still there, but they're pretty much covered over with vines and stuff like that.
Yeah, okay. 'Cause if they weren't, I'd say that shade mix leading up to the kill plot would be ideal. 'Cause
Right.
it's gonna get those deer, they're munching along. Ooh, what's up over there? I better go check that out. But yeah, just broadcasting your food plot, after you get the residue off there, the leaves, so the number one key to getting a successful food plot is seed to soil contact.
Okay.
That's by far, if you fail at doing a food plot and you look back and you go, I broadcasted it in really loose soil, but I didn't pack it back down or I didn't get it incorporated at all. You need to set yourself up for success before you begin.
Okay, now
And
how do I compact it?
just so you can either take, if you can get a four wheeler in there, just run
Yeah.
a four wheeler, just drive around in circles for 20 minutes just to get it firmed up a little bit after you broadcast your seed.
Because I can get the gator down there.
Yep. And then I'm sure, there's plenty of stores or plenty of little farm implement type stores that you could probably rent a roller packer of sorts, and that would really help. But I've honestly packed down a food plot before driving in circles with a four wheeler for about an hour. It just takes a lot of time at 4 inches wide with a four wheeler.
Right.
But that's the number one thing. You just want that seed to soil contact. If you don't have that, you're probably not going to have the best results.
So years ago, I sat on the back of a truck and I broadcast, but we'd never compacted it. And that's why it didn't grow.
Yep, that's the probably the number one thing. If you don't, I guess if you kind of know the farming community, on the back of any drill or seeder, they have those big rubber wheels.
Right.
Those are packing wheels. So once that seed gets dropped, what do? Those pack it down. That's your seed to soil contact right there. Without that, it's very slim that you're going to get a really good stand.
All right. Noted.
So that's, and I talk to a lot of different people on the phone, and that's not just for food plots. That's for if you're planting a new lawn, if you're planting your garden, if you're planting a 190 acre field. first and foremost, you got to have that seed bed prepped, which if you remove the residue in your case, that's number one. You want that seed to be able to get to the soil. And number two is that seed to soil contact. If it's just laying there on the top, probably not going to grow. So I don't know if here's, I guess, kind of an analogy. If you've ever spilled seed on a pave, on like a driveway or something that has a crack going through it,
Right.
and you sweep it off, the little seeds that fall in that crack, some of those you're going to see a little sprout coming out of.
They're going to germinate.
They're going to germinate. And why is that? Because they got down to the soil.
Interesting.
So seed to soil contact, no matter how big or how small of a project you're doing, that's your first, have that ingrained in your brain.
Yeah.
So you have, so you're going to have a successful stand before you start.
No, those rollers, I just put water in there, right? Or not even, yeah, you just
You,
put.
and it depends on the, you know, if it's really, really light soil, you're probably going to want water into it to really squish it down. But if it's already fairly firm soil to begin with, then you probably don't need a whole lot of weight. You know, you're just trying to get the seeds pushed down a little bit on the seed bed.
And I couldn't just walk and tamp and walk and tamp because it
Oh, you
isn't that big an area.
you could. It, and I've done it in my yard with my feet. Just walk in a circle until you look at it and you go, oh, it's pretty well packed down. You know, it doesn't have to be anything special. You just want that seed to soil contact.
Good. Good to know.
So, yeah, I mean, I talk with lots of people every day, not just about food plots, because we sell everything from garden seed, you know, from a little 1 ounce package of garden seed all the way up to a 2,500 pound bag of seed for a field. And I talk to anybody and everybody in between that.
Wow.
You know, so it's one of those things that from a food plot side of things, what we do on the ag side of things really commingles and really helps out on the food plot side of things.
Wow. So let's switch it up. And in the warm up, we talked about food plots out west. And you told me that Arrowseed's looking into getting, into the business because, yeah, there's a lot of pivots out here and they're growing alfalfa. We bet it hasn't taken off because most of our hunting is on public land. So why would you put a food plot in on public land? There are some reasons you do that, but just depending on where the land is and what you're trying to do. Go ahead. What were you
Well, I
going to
was
say?
gonna say, yeah, when it comes to out west, you know, there's a lot of variability about putting a food plot in on public land, just from a logistics perspective, and if it's even feasible.
And it is feasible because, I'm thinking the places that I'd actually like to try, but I'm not going to because I'm too old now. But back in the day, I had a couple honey holes that not a lot of people could get into. And, you don't have to know how to get into them. And it was completely legal, completely on public land, but you just had to figure out how to get into them. And I wish, had been into food plots at that time, because I could have thrown it on my backpack, taken my Jeep in there, then taken my backpack in there, simple tools, nothing really radical, but then you could have a kill plot, I'll just say it like that, that would be interesting, for the deer or the elk.
Well, and so what I've seen personally, and what I talk about a lot on the phone, I planted a food plot, the deer won't touch it. What's going on? If it's something that they've never ever experienced before, they're probably going to shy away until they take a bite, and then they're going to be like, oh, I was missing out. This is awesome. I had that happen on one of the plots that we planted. We did just straight turnips and radishes, just because. And the deer, we didn't have a single deer in that plot until like the middle of December. Well, what happened in the middle of December is it snowed. All their regular sources were covered up by snow, and this plot was nice and protected, so it didn't get as much snow cover on it, and it was green. That's where they came. And once they started figuring out what it was and it was good, they hammered it. So that being said, our Crunch and Munch food plot, literally has like there's 7 or 8 different things in it. So it's going to have something in there that's familiar to the deer. Well, once they start eating that, you know, if you have a Caesar salad in front of you and you stick your fork down, are you going to get just one little tiny piece of lettuce or are you going to get a whole bunch of different stuff on your fork? You're going to get a whole bunch of different stuff. Same way with the deer, when they go down, they see that one alfalfa shoot, they go down to eat it. Are they going to get just that one plant? No, they're going to get a bunch of different stuff. And that's what keeps them, you know, keeps them coming back because they go, oh, that's really good. I'm going to keep eating that. So in your little honey hole kill plot, that crunch and munch would be, that would be perfect because it's going to have at least one thing in there that the deer would be familiar with.
How about elk?
Elk will eat a lot of different stuff. The elk with that crunch and munch. So elk will eat a lot of wheat. They eat a lot of rye. They eat oats. They eat corn. They eat alfalfa. That crunch and munch would be perfect for that.
And you're thinking, how big a food plot should you put in for, Western species?
That's pretty variable. But honestly, I'd say probably an acre would be the least that I'd want to see. And that might even not be quite enough. It depends on a lot of different stuff. We helped a guy out, oh, I think it was last year. We designed kind of a custom blend for him that was a 5 acre kill plot in the foothills of the mountains in Colorado. So,
And
and
he
that
owned the
one was,
land then. He had control of the land.
But I'd say for most areas, you'd probably want about an acre just to make sure that you have enough to make it worth the time and effort that's going to hold animals or at least get them to stop and munch for a little bit.
Yeah, the other thing I need to say, you need to check your regs and in your states, the legality of putting a food plot out there. And I'm not an expert on that. And so I'm not the right guy to say, nor is Logan. Disclaimer, disclaimer, check the local,
Always
regs.
always follow local rules and regulations, no
There you
matter
go. That's a good
where you're at.
disclaimer. I
So
like that.
I was in Minnesota the past 5 days ice fishing, and we started catching a bunch of crappie. I was like, well, how many of these can we keep? It was pretty simple to pull my phone out and look up and see what the regulation was for that body of water we were on.
Right.
So yeah, always make sure you're doing it legal.
Yeah, and I would agree and underscore that. So, Logan, this has been very entertaining and informative. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
You can give us a phone call. Our toll-free number is 800-622-4727. Or you can always drop us an email at info@arrowseed.com. Or if you're Facebook savvy, you can always get on the Arrow Seed Company Facebook page and drop us a message on there.
And the website.
Yep, the website's just arrowseed.com, and I think there's a spot on there where you can correspond with us.
All right.
And if there's not, I better, when I'm done with this
You
podcast,
better put one on there.
I better go put one on there.
Well, thank
So.
you so much for being a guest. And it's just, in the world of hunting, things are changing. But one thing that has just exploded and is the people, non-farmers, that decide, hey, I want to put in a food plot, and then they go out and make the mistakes, and then they start getting it right, then they're buying equipment, and they're turning into farmers. They really are. And this can be, okay, listen to this, folks. It can be an economical way of, one, providing good nutrition for your herd, two, increasing the health of your herd, and getting into the marketing where everybody says you can build or create bigger bucks. Not, I'll underscore this, if you don't have the genes in your area, now during a rut, that could be 5 miles, that could be almost 10 miles. Okay. But you need the good genetics in your area, or you could put out the best smorgasbord protein meal 24/7, 365, and you're not going to kill big deer. Not going to happen. I wish there was a magic bullet for that, but there really isn't. And that's unfortunate. But that's the way nature is set up. So you need good genes in your herd. And you've heard this before, let them go, let them live, let them grow. And that's what it takes. It takes age class recruitment, and food, but you have to have the genes. Your thoughts on that? Then we'll close it up.
I think you pretty much nailed it. And honestly, when you look at it from a genetic standpoint, with us here at Arrowseed, our seed is the newest and the best genetics from a seed standpoint. So we're looking at it like that. Well, you're not going to have very good results if you don't have if you don't have good genetics.
Right.
It can be said for a lot of stuff. Seed and deer hunting are probably the top two,
There you go.
So going back to our green screen, when you were going to ask if it had Egyptian weed in it. So Egyptian weed's been around for years.
Gazillionaires.
Yeah, forever. Do you think there's newer and better genetics that have built off of that
Well, of course there is. Of course there is.
that are more adapt to this day and age? Yes, there is. So that's why we don't have Egyptian wheat in our food plot screen, in our green screen. We have stuff that we know is going to stand. We have stuff in it that we know is more drought tolerant. We have stuff in it that maybe has a little bit better disease and insect resistant versus Egyptian wheat. So that's something to think about. And that we do that for all of the stuff that we sell, all of the seeds that we sell. We try to have the best genetics to get the best results.
And I would just put a period on that by saying, do not fall for the marketing and read the bag tag.
Yep, read the labels. That's a big part of it. And here at Arrowseed, we don't have a huge marketing budget, and it shows, but we've got a lot of repeat customers that have tried other brands that they go, they're really good on the marketing side of things, but they don't have very good back end. I had a food plot failure. I called them and they said, tough cookies. Well, you call us, we actually interact. We've done it myself numerous times. We'll walk somebody through, maybe why did it fail? We want to set you guys up for success. Without you guys having success, we're not going to have success.
That's a recipe for a good company, that's for sure. And you've been around, what, 35 years?
No, about 75.
75. So there
We've
you
been around for a while.
go.
We've been around since about the time Egyptian wheat came onto the market.
Well, I got to close this up. And on behalf of Hutch on Hunting, thank you, Logan, so much from Arrowseed. And folks, give them a call. You got questions? Give them a call. He told you how to do it. Or just go to the website at arrowseed.com. So this is Hutch saying, go out and make it a fantastic day and start thinking about your food plots. If you've never put one in, give Logan a call. He'll tell you how to do it.